The reason we contacted you is because we found this slide that we thought was you. So do you mind just telling us who you are and confirming this, please?
Okay, well, I'm Richard Kingsmill, and yes, that slide which I've just been shown is me. Would have been around probably 1986, 1987 in the studios of 2SER when it was right up the top of the... Well, what's the building called now?
It's technically building one, but it's the Jenga block.
It's the big ugly building on Broadway in Sydney, which is 26 floors high.
Yeah.
And you used to have to get into these elevators to go up to the very top. And I used to do late night shifts when I started, and it was a very eerie building to walk into. And those lifts made a lot of noise, and they rattled all the way to the very top of 26 floors, and then you got out. And that's where 2SER was, and that's where I started my radio career pretty much.
Wow. Do you remember, I'm really interested to know, just, you know, to start off with that, because that's prime real estate now. Like, that's where the big wigs of the uni live now. So you're all the way up there looking out over Sydney, working out how the buttons work.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was very inspiring. You kind of felt important being up there as well, because you could basically see everywhere around the city. And there was a couple of studios up there, and there was a couple of production suites and some offices. And, you know, for about 3 years there, I was a volunteer at 2SER. I'd been at Macquarie University, and that's where I fell in love with radio, because I did the mass communications course there.
Right.
So for the second year of that, there was a little bit of TV, there was a little bit of film, and there was a little bit of radio. And then you had to figure out which one of those three you wanted to concentrate on for the final year of your degree. But I remember it was like a flashbulb. As soon as I walked into the studios at Macquarie University for 2SER, as soon as I walked into that on-air studio, a light bulb went off in my head, and I just went, this is what I want. Because I really didn't know at that point whether it was journalism, whether it was TV, whether it was advertising. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I knew it was something in that area. But as soon as I walked into that on-air studio, I just went, wow, okay, this I think is for me. And I wasn't very good at it when I started. That was the thing. I think that was the challenge. I knew there was something there for me, but I wasn't a natural. I had to work really hard.
So when you say you weren't very good at it, what do you mean?
Well, I remember my first shift on air, I remember Ian Coombe, who works at the ABC with me now, and I'm still friendly with, and I see him around. He was one of the volunteer coordinators at Macquarie, and he... before my first shift, I remember, because it was 11 o'clock in the morning and I had to do a two-hour talk type program, I was as nervous as hell, and he just gave me a piece of paper with three words written on it, and he said, okay, we'll introduce the program and see how you go. And I was like, well, what am I supposed to say? It's like there's three words on a piece of paper. I have no idea what I'm supposed... What am I supposed to just read these three words out? No, do an introduction to the program, he said, with this is what's on the program. And it was like, seriously, three words. I had no idea what the stories were about. I had no idea what the context was about. And I said, I'm sorry, I have no idea what to do. So he sat in the chair and he did it. And he just like, you know, just rolled it off the top of his tongue. And I went, oh, I see. We have to link it all together and sort of introduce it properly. So
you've got radio catchphrase or something. That's how, that was your instruction.
Now I understand how, you know, you write down those little points and you can refer to it. But it was all in his head. He just had to show me how to do it. So, look, from sort of, you know, bumbling my way through radio and, you know, trying to learn how to do it better and listening back and going, oh, my God, I sound so awful and that was really boring and what a terrible interview and all that sort of stuff. I had a passion for it. I really wanted to do radio and I wanted to get better, and I loved the experience of working at 2SER. It was surrounded by a whole bunch of creative minds, a lot of fantastic volunteers. I made some really lifelong friendships there. A lot of people who I work with at the ABC now in different areas, in Radio National and elsewhere, they came through pretty much, you know, around the time I did as well. So it was a good feeding ground. I mean, there was a lot of talent.
Well, this is the thing too. We've got this, we know with the archive, we've got this really careful job of how do we pay tribute, but also how do we not kind of, how do we not embarrass people? Or how do we say, you know, like, because if we find a tape, say, of you in 1986, are you all right with that?
Of course.
Oh, okay.
I have no problems whatsoever. I mean, all of that stuff is, it's kind of funny to look back on it and listen back to it. And, I'm my worst critic. Okay. You know, no one else can tear me apart as much as I tear myself apart about what I do and how my radio shows work and all that sort of stuff. So I'm pretty brutal on myself. So if anyone else hears dodgy old programs that I've been a part of, it's fine. Take me to town. I've already been there.
I love looking at these slides too. There looks like there was a really diverse range of people that were working there. And of course, On Air is the big ticket item, but you would have done a lot of behind the scenes work, which you've then gone on to do. And I mean, your principal job now, let me see if I get this right. Your chief, can you give me your proper title?
Well, it's called Triple J Group Music Director. So, after I left SER, I started as a producer at Triple J. I must give credit to 2NUR though in Newcastle. They gave me my first public radio in Newcastle. They gave me my first full paid radio gig because my experience at SER sort of set me up for that. So I got a good 6-7 months working in Newcastle. Then I got a job at Triple J, started as a producer, then went into presenting, and then went into the music directing role. But in the last few years, my job's kind of been to oversee all the different stations that Triple J is kind of involved with. So that's now Double J, it's Unearthed. We also are looking after the local radio programming on 702 and also Country Now, the digital stations. So I'm the group music director who works with the music directors at each of those.
Wow.
So I'm kind of overseeing policy, overseeing that we're not sort of just doubling up and adding the same songs to each of the networks, trying to figure out who each audience is for each of the networks, and working with some really great music directors and trying to get it right, trying to provide really great music for each of those stations. So that's what I do now.
Yeah. But I mean, would you say, and you know, how that kind of early process, because the thing I love about community radio and all community media really is you can do everything. You take the bins out one day, you're on air the next day.
Hasn't changed,
you're
running. Yeah. That's me in a nutshell. Back in the mid 80s, I was happy to do anything. I left university at the end of 84, and I'd been doing programs through 84 both at Macquarie and also in Sydney at Broadway. But then in 85 I was a free agent and I was doing some freelance writing. I was trying to get money together, but I got a bit of paid work at SER, but that came with time. I was a volunteer and it would be everything from writing on records, please do not steal from 2SER on the vinyl, to filing those records, to cleaning the bins, to recycling tape, to dubbing programs. And then I was producing programs. I was producing the Serbian program.
Yeah, right.
Which didn't involve a lot. It was to play the intro at the start of the program, then to play a record in the middle of the half-hour program, and then to basically sign off with the same record at the end and really just sort of sit there and make sure I got the levels right for the presenter. I also produced the Lebanese talkback program on a Friday night, which was a hell of a lot of fun. It was all completely in Lebanese and I was in control of the dump button, so I just had to rely on the presenter pointing to me if anything blasphemous or was said that had to be off air, because it was just this dynamic program.
You didn't learn to swear in Lebanese?
No, I had no idea, but it was a lot of fun, and there was a huge crowd of the Lebanese community came in on a Friday night. So I was doing things like that, getting, little bits of money here and there. But it was whatever needed to be done. I didn't so much make a nuisance of myself. I just hung around a lot to learn about radio and to learn off different people and to try to get as much radio experience as I could.
Yeah. Well, and I guess that's the thing too that we're so proud of, that we're still able to let people do that, even though that kind of changes. Radio is not just audio anymore. It's not just lives in one medium. It lives all over the place. And so,
well, it's changed a lot. I mean, that's the thing that's kind of kept me interested in radio, is that everything is a very different landscape. The principles are still there. You've got to communicate. You've got to come up with good ideas. You've got to be, informative and also entertaining. But there's a very visual aspect now to radio, and there's a lot of stuff that we were really hoping for back in those days. Like, you put a great program together, you'd go, oh, gee, I wish people could hear that again.
Yeah.
Because back when you were making radio in the 80s, it was, unless people were listening to it, it was dead and gone the moment you turned your microphone off at the end of that shift. So there's a lot of pluses, and it's a very exciting medium still, I find.
Mm. Is there anything from that time that you do? And I mean, we do have some reels. We've got a whole bunch of stuff that's living at 301 Studios at the moment being digitised. We don't know what's on them. They're, reels of different sizes and descriptions. Is there anything, though, that you remember from that time that you made, you were associated with, that you think, geez, I hope there's a little fragment of that there?
I put together a documentary series which was called, give me a moment, it was called Money Not Harmony, which I won an award for. And it was basically looking at how money dictated a lot of what the music industry was giving as opposed to harmony, as opposed to the talent itself.
Yeah, yeah.
It was looking at how back then the music publications were dictating their editorial based on what the advertising was within them.
Mm.
But it was also looking at other things as well, about just how money went hand in hand with the industry and how that was dictating a lot of what we were given and what we were getting to hear. You got to remember, this was back in the days when it was vinyl, seven-inch singles.
Pay for play, all that stuff was
That was a big time in the 80s, especially in America. That's when that news was really breaking about all the payola scandal.
Mm.
So I was kind of looking at it a little bit on the Australian perspective, which was never as bad, but sort of digging into what were making these decisions, who were making these decisions and why were they making them. There was that. I also remember I did a Saturday night program called Electric Lounge, which was a two-hour program, and we had some remarkable scores in a way. I remember we got Chris Thomas, who's a very famous English music producer, who started off at Abbey Road working with the Beatles, doing the White album, and he was just a kid, an assistant engineer, and he kind of came through then. He produced the first Sex Pistols record. He produced NXS through the 80s. He worked with bands like The Pretenders. He worked with Elton John, Paul McCartney. An amazing, amazing producer. And I remember we got a tip-off that he was in town. I think he was working with NXS at the time. And I managed to get his phone number. No, I found out where he was staying. I rang the hotel. Like, this is what you do in public radio. You go, well, why not? I'll just ring the hotel and ask to speak to Chris Thomas. Got through to his room. And I said, hi, Chris. My name's Richard Kingsmill. I'm a presenter at 2SER Public Radio in Sydney. I'd love it if you came in on my program. And, we talked about the records. And he said, which records did you want to talk about? And I was a massive Roxy Music, still am, massive Roxy Music fan, and he made those early 70s Roxy Music records as well. And I said, oh, well, a bit about NXS, but Roxy Music and the Pretenders. I think he liked the fact that I didn't want to talk about the Beatles.
Right.
I didn't want to talk about anything that was really obvious.
Mm.
I just wanted to talk about the records that I really loved that had his name on the back. Anyway, lo and behold, he said yes. And he came in and he was amazing to talk to, and we talked about all sorts of stuff. And then in my crappy car, I drove him back to the hotel. And years later, I remember telling people that I worked with at Triple J, I got to interview Chris. You got to interview Chris Thomas. Chris Thomas, the producer. And they couldn't believe that I'd actually managed to get this guy, because he doesn't do a lot of interviews.
Yeah.
But I think the power of public radio is that because they don't think it's going to be, front page news everywhere, you can get some of these people sometimes.
Yeah, well, here we are. I sent you an email. Here we go. Didn't quite chase you down, but,
present company excluded.
It's really interesting too. And, you mentioned too, I guess it's the importance of just being a fan. Like, this is a place where fans can just come and kind of do what they want, kind of not irrespective of what the industry is doing, but often it's ahead of the grain of industry. Like, we're not tied to, what type of music's charting or not charting or what, there's really room for lots of different things to come in here.
Well, the strength of SER then and the strength of SER still today is the amount of volunteers you have and the amount of talent, because we're all reflecting different parts of experience of the city of Sydney, what we've grown up with and what we're passionate about as well.
Yeah.
So I was meeting people from all sorts of walks of life when I was a volunteer for 3 years. And as I said, developed some close friendships, but also developed a real understanding of what the community of Sydney really is.
Yeah.
And to get an idea of the fabric that this city is made up of, which back in the 80s was really exciting, but of course now is even more diverse and even more exciting and harder to get your head around.
Yeah.
Unless you meet these people and work with them and get to understand. So with the strength of numbers come the strength of perspectives, and that's what public radio should be about.